Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimebo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with NFL Shop Europe. We're sponsored by DraftKings.co.uk, your home of one-day fantasy sports. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds, back from a short post-Super Bowl break in New York, and I'm joined by my regular partner, Jeff Rimebo. Jeff, how are you, mate?
I'm doing great. I tell you what, it's been way too long since we did this. Man, oh man, it seems like 6 months ago.
I know, it does. Time does fly in the off season. The off season is now in full swing. Jeff, before we get going, I know you and I have spoken off this podcast over the last couple of weeks, but I just want to pass on my condolences to you and from all the British fans. I know you received a lot of outpouring from the British fans after the loss of your dad. So we're sending you big hugs and lots of love from this side of the Atlantic.
Well, I appreciate that very much. I was really blessed to have the father that I did. And Neil, he was an amazing man. And he went into hospice right during Super Bowl week and was tough enough to hang around enough for me to get home. And so it worked out about as good as you could. It's never easy to lose a parent, particularly your dad. But it was a blessing to have an opportunity to get home, and I appreciate everything from you and everybody else. That it was kind of humbling, really, the number of people that reached out. So again, I feel blessed, and you got to carry on the work.
All right, man. Well, I know I just put you on the spot there because I didn't tell you I was going to do that, but I just wanted to send you some hugs and some love because you sent them my way this time last year. So we look out for each other, right?
Yes, that's what friends do, my man. That's what friends do.
There we go. Jeff, let's get into the off-season then. Obviously, we got the Combine's coming up in March. It's a little bit later this year. Free agency starts on March the 9th, and we're already starting to see teams make those moves that you call the business of the business. I should actually just point out, before we get into the chat about the off-season and free agency, and it is a very exciting time, you've got to be careful how excited you get. And I'll give you a couple of examples. So the Jacksonville Jaguars have just cut Jared Odrick, Jeff. He was 2 years into a five-year $42.5 million deal. And they've just traded Julius Thomas, or they will. They've agreed in principle a trade. It can't happen until the league year opens on March the 9th. But they've agreed to trade Julius Thomas to the Miami Dolphins. He was 2 years into a five-year $46 million deal. We're going to see lots of moves, lots of headlines in the coming weeks and months, and they don't all pan out, do they?
No, they don't, but I think what's going on, it was really, I don't know if you caught it, Neil, but did you see Odrick actually tweeted and sent out on social media? He was on the beach somewhere in the Caribbean, I believe it was, his reaction to getting the call that he'd been released. You know what? This is that time of year, like you say, the business end of the business, and teams are trying to create cap space. They're trying to create roster spots. They're trying to manipulate the roster through trades, free agency, cutting players, adding players, anything that they can do to try and improve their, improve their roster. And, you know, I think the Julius Thomas trade, Neil, was really interesting because if you look at that kid's career, he's kind of been, if you think about it, here's a guy that was let go by Denver. When I say let go, they could have kept him if they chose. They didn't.
Yeah.
Now the Jacksonville's choosing to trade him. An extremely talented guy. But I think from the Dolphins' standpoint, the one thing that would be a positive as I look at this thing, or the biggest positive as I look at this thing, is here's an athletic guy who can certainly give you another, another set of weapons, but his best football was played when Adam Gase was the offensive coordinator in Denver.
Yeah, those 2 years in 2013, 2014 were his best seasons. He was a tight end who had 12 touchdowns in back-to-back seasons there, Jeff, with the Denver Broncos. That was the first guy in NFL history to do that as a tight end. He's still only 28, but of course, I think that's why it looks like Miami are going to send Brandon Albert in the other direction to the Jacksonville Jaguars as well, both for late, obviously a player swap, but also exchanging late round draft picks. Brandon Albert is a little bit older. He has an injury concern. Thomas has injury concerns, but he's 28, Jeff. He had a finger surgery in 2015. He came back in the October of that year and had ankle and elbow injuries Last year, he fractured his tailbone. I mean, former basketball guy, does he, you know, you worry about that kind of stuff, but he's got some years left, so maybe he is worth a low-round gamble.
Yeah, and you know what? This is what makes this part of the season, I think, so exciting because, you know, it's not just us as fans of the game that are eagerly anticipating and watching all these transactions take place. You got to think about it now from the coaches' standpoint as they hear on a daily basis about roster moves to improve or, you know, move positions, create spots on their roster for new guys. And then also think about guys like Kelvin Beachum, that friend of ours from the podcast, who is out there now thinking, okay, now they just traded to get another offensive lineman in here. What does that do for me? What is, you know, his agent's now starting to, you know, formulate ideas about where they're going to market their client next. You know, I mean, it's just a whole, everybody is involved in this process from management, ownership, coaching, fans, I mean, everybody, agents, everybody's involved. And that's why we say we got to come up with a better name for this part of the year because off-season just doesn't do it good.
No, it really doesn't. There's so much to talk about, and each move impacts another. As you say, I think last year when Miami signed Laremy Tunsil in the draft, Jeff, and they liked what they saw at left guard, they plan to move him out to left tackle this year. Well, that means you're going to cut Brandon Albert, so then you try and swing a trade. And, you know, like you said, Kelvin Beachum was already obviously hearing from Jacksonville that he wasn't going to be re-signed, and that puts him as one of the best young offensive tackles now back on the market. And, I think we had a question actually in the mailbag, Jeff. I'll take this now. And it comes from Simon Kirby. He said, the Brandon Albert, Julius Thomas trade, a better move for the Jags or the Dolphins? What do you think?
Well, I think it's what you'd like all trades to be, which is good for both sides.
Yeah.
Because I think Brandon Albert, again, firms up a problem area for Jacksonville. I think Julius Thomas, you know, as you mentioned, he's going to a place where, and a guy who understands his talent level, understands what he can bring to an offense, and had two of his best, you know, career years working together. So I see positives on both sides of the equation, and I think that's the way you would hope all trades go down.
Yeah, and injuries and staying healthy is going to be key. Whichever one stays the healthiest could be the winner of that trade, I think.
Well, that's a great observation, Neil, and that's really true in every one of these scenarios as they begin to play out in the off season, whether it's a free agency acquisition, a trade, or a draft pick. You know, I mean, the guy's got to stay healthy. If he can't be on the field, you look at, you know, some of the guys that have been drafted in the first round over the last couple of years, hurt in training camp, you know, really never play that whole first year, some of them. And, you know, again, that sets you back from a franchise standpoint because you start investing, you know, money, draft picks, you know, free agency spots, all that stuff, franchise tags, all of those things. Those guys have got to stay healthy and produce.
We're going to look at a couple of other bits of news. We will start our State of the Franchise series this week looking at the Cleveland Browns, the San Francisco 49ers, and the Chicago Bears. We'll also take your questions in the mailbag on this week's Inside the Huddle. Jeff, we always say it's business decisions that come about at this time of year, and sometimes when you're a player who gets up there in a certain length of time, your contract, even a veteran minimum contract, is going to be expensive. And we've seen a number of players cut already. So notably Victor Cruz with the New York Giants and Mario Williams after just that one season with the Dolphins. Rashad Jennings was also cut by the Giants. We're going to probably see more of these as we get to the opening of the league year because teams will want to clear up some cap space. I guess it's just the danger of being a veteran player in the NFL, isn't it, Jeff?
Well, it's the business of the business, and that's, you know, we're going through it the same thing right now in the CFL where there are veteran free agents out there that, you know, you'd like to sign, but you can't sign them at the dollars that they think they deserve. And, you know, they have to make a decision whether they want to continue to play the game or whether they're going to, you know, go into retirement. And then you look at guys like Victor Cruz and Rashad Jennings, and those are guys that are good football players that probably still have some tread left on the tire, but you look at the Giants and they feel like, you know, their young back is the back of the future. And, You know, I'm sure they look at Cruz's injury history now. I mean, that's really it's a tough one emotionally, especially for a guy like Victor Cruz, who grew up in that area, was a Giants fan as a kid. You know, he's such a great story, coming as an undrafted guy, making the Giants, becoming a superstar in the league. And then, you know, the injury thing just wouldn't let him continue to play at that level. New guy comes in, Beckham comes in, kind of takes over, and it's time for him to now go. If he's going to continue to play, he's going to have to go somewhere else. But, again, those are the tough things about the business. We say it all the time, Neil. It's a great game, and it's a tough business.
Yeah. Jeff, I guess we kind of saw that with Victor Cruz. I remember sitting with you in the studio week 17 or 16, the last Giants home game they had, and he was kind of waving goodbye. I think he knew the writing was on the wall and that was going to happen. Mario Williams doesn't surprise me. He got benched in Miami and, again, never really gave them anything other than a big contract that they had to fulfill. So that one doesn't surprise me. I guess we're going to see in the next couple of weeks, the window to place the franchise tag is... on players is open, but I mean that won't happen until towards the end of that window. But we might see Kirk Cousins. If Kirk Cousins signs this franchise tag with Washington, Jeff, over the past 2 years, he'll be the highest paid player in the NFL. He'll have parlayed $53 million in franchise tags. I mean, I don't think sometimes players don't like signing franchise tags. I don't think he's going to be that bent out of shape about it or put out really.
Yeah, I mean, I'll trade paychecks with him if he wants to do that. But you know what? I just don't. You think about that franchise tag issue with Washington. Can they afford to do that?
Yeah.
Right inside their cap, because they still got other things that they need to do. And I think what obviously for Washington, the strategy, to me anyway, would be to sign him to a long-term deal where you can spread that money out over the terms of the agreement. And, you know, he's going to command a top salary. I mean, that's just the supply and demand rules, right? But if you just put it all in that 1 year, how are they going to get the guys back that they need to get back? Because they've got other guys on the free agency market that they're going to try. They need to sign. You can't just put it all in one guy. And that's again, where these capologists at each team and the GMs and the head coaches are going to sit down and they're going to come up with a strategy that they feel works for them.
Well, yeah, you can call it a quarterback-driven league, Jeff, but they've got Pierre Garçon is a free agent. He's already said on Twitter that he thinks he's kind of done, or not in so many words. You've got DeSean Jackson, who is a free agent. You've got a need for a pass rusher, another pass rusher. You've got need at safety, so... You know, eventually you have to look at the other areas of your roster as well, and not necessarily to jettison Kirk Cousins, because obviously you have to find a quarterback, but you certainly, like you say, you want to spread it across a number of years. You don't want to go year to year on the salary cap, because they're already going 20% raise on last year.
Yeah, I know. And you know what? Hey, it is a quarterback-driven league, but let me tell you something. When they pull the limo up and he's driving, you want some other people in the thing with him, you know? You can't – I mean, you can't be empty.
Well, he won't
so
care.
You got to have – well, you need 10 other guys on the field just to get on the field. So.
Fair enough. Jeff, one other thing that was actually – while I was in the States and I was listening to some of the American radio stations and this has been the talk since the Super Bowl. Obviously, you know, Tom Brady's greatness has been a topic of conversation. Bill Belichick, what about classic Belichick at the victory parade when he's chanting, leading the chant, no days off, no days off. And there's a couple of Patriots players there who are kind of singing along, but it's half-hearted. They're probably thinking, we'd like a day off every now and then. But that's just him, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, his you know, most memorable quote to me is, well, we're 5 weeks behind on the draft.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he's already...
How much fun is he at a party?
He's like, wrap this up, guys. We're 5 weeks late. What I was going to say is that a lot of the talk has been about Terrell Owens not getting into the Hall of Fame. And, you know, we look at the Hall of Fame as a place where if you put up historic numbers, then you are going to take your place among the greats of the game. And Terrell Owens has outstanding numbers. He's got 1,078 catches. That's eighth all-time. 15,934 receiving yards, second only to the great Jerry Rice. And 153 receiving touchdowns, third all-time behind Randy Moss and Jerry Rice. But he played for five teams, Jeff, and he didn't make it to the final 10. Didn't even make it to the final 10. And he's been outspoken since then. There's been back and forth in the media about people who did and didn't vote for him. And it's trying to balance all of that. Was he a bad teammate? He's been described as a locker room cancer. You balance that stuff against outstanding numbers.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. I'm going to give you two answers on this one. Number one, my just flat football fan answer. Mm-hmm. And to me, the Hall of Fame is a place for the greatest players of all time. And how can you argue against the numbers that he put up? He is one of the, second all time to Jerry Rice, mm-hmm. eight, You went through it all, right? I mean, you cannot argue with those numbers. Now, the other side of it, from looking at it from a coaching perspective, obviously I understand why people are reticent to vote for the guy because he did a lot of things and rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. But I will caution you when you say that, think about Chris Carter, right? Chris Carter, by his own admission, said that the best thing that ever happened to him was Buddy Ryan cutting him in Philadelphia because he was such a knucklehead. Yeah. Now, and again, he was not without his, warts.
Right.
And those aren't the only guy. He's not the only guy that's in the hall
that
way.
There's a guy who's coming up for election next year, Randy Moss, who actually admitted that he quit on teams. He walked off the field when he was with the Oakland Raiders. He actually said, I play when I want to play. Now, if Randy Moss gets in next year and Terrell Owens doesn't, then you've got a real mess.
Yeah, I agree with that. And again, as I said, from a purely fan perspective, right, how could you say Randy Moss not in the Hall of Fame? How can you say Terrell Owens not in the Hall of Fame?
Yeah.
From my professional perspective, to think that a guy would openly admit that he quit on his teammates, that goes against everything you stand for in the game. Mm. But the reality of it is, what is the Hall for? The best players of all time. That's my understanding of it. Not the best guys, not the greatest teammate. Mm. Not the most unselfish guys. It's the greatest players of all time. And you cannot argue that those numbers and those guys were the greatest. If Randy Moss or Terrell Owens chose to be bad guys or not give 100%, that's their personal choice. But the reality of it is, you're not judging their personal choice. You're judging their numbers. And so when you look at their numbers, to me, they're Hall of Famers.
Yeah, especially when you look at, Jeff, I just think you not everyone in the locker room is going to be a choir boy. Sometimes it's a fractious place, and you could have a guy who's on your team. You'd be like, well, that guy's just an idiot and he's a pain in the backside. But you know what? He produces, and this is a production league, and I don't necessarily agree with everything Terrell Owens did, but I don't think you can argue with the numbers.
No, it comes down to you make a firm decision about what is the criteria. Mm. Is the criteria this is a place for the greatest players of all time? I keep going back to that, but that's the bottom line. The bottom line is the bottom line. The Hall of Fame, the greatest players of all time in the history of the game. Well, okay, judge me, find a reason why a guy who's second all time in receptions and all the statistics that you just ran out there, how he cannot be in the Hall of Fame when there are other guys that have numbers significantly lower than that that are in the Hall of Fame.
Jeff, this comes up every year. There's always a little bit of grumbling every year, and it is a little bit of a logjam, and it's hard to get everyone in every time. There's like five modern era candidates that go in as players each year. So I think the Baseball Hall of Fame has a leeway of up to 10 each year. They don't use that, but there's that option. Do you have a problem with any of the kind of the way it's decided? And I can't believe I'm going to suggest this as a sports writer, but it's the sports writers that decide who goes in the Hall of Fame for the most part. There are a couple of Hall of Famers on the selection committee, Dan Fouts and James Lofton. But for the most part, there's a representative who covers the Buffalo Bills, somebody from the Atlanta Falcons, somebody from the New York Giants. It's sports writers who are deciding who takes their place among the greatest of all time.
I agree with that, Neil. The only thing I would say is that I would like to see the representation of Hall of Famers increased.
Yeah.
So, like you said, whether it's James Lofton and Dan Fouts, and if you had one from every division, or I don't know how you would do it exactly, not without putting some thought to it. But I think there should be a, because those guys are the ones that are in there. And
yeah.
It's like, you know, it's like joining a fraternity in college, I guess. Those guys should have opinion on who joins that very select club.
That was actually, interestingly, listening to some of the chatter and rumors around the U.S., it was the opinions of former Hall of Famers that was keeping Terrell Owens out a little bit, Jeff. There was an element of that. They didn't want him in their club.
Yeah, and I think that in some ways is good. You know, you look at some of the other, you know, other sports have the same issues. Pete Rose, who's the all-time, I think still the all-time hits leader in baseball, isn't in the Hall of Fame because he bet on the game.
Mm.
Well, you know, again, that may keep him out forever. The all-time all-timer.
Mm.
You know, Barry Bonds' issue with PEDs. All of those things are factors in this whole process, and I think it's best if the Hall and the guys that are in the Hall, the busts, as John Madden calls it, that they have some input into these kinds of guys. Because, you know, obviously if you just go sheerly on numbers, then there's no way you could keep him out.
No. Well, it'll be interesting to watch next year as Terrell Owens and Randy Moss could be among the finalists in Minneapolis when they pick the next round of players to go into the Hall of Fame. Let's move on to our State of the Franchise series then, and we'll start with the Cleveland Browns, the San Francisco 49ers and the Chicago Bears, which allows me to make my annual joke, Jeff, that they're in the right old state if we're going to do the State of the Franchise. As we but very, very broad overview, as we look at these three teams, they are an absolute perfect example of how you have to have a quarterback in today's NFL, because I can think of roster deficiencies on other teams. These teams all struggled on defense as well, but the New Orleans Saints struggled on defense, but Drew Brees makes them competitive. If you look at the Detroit Lions roster, Jeff, it's not perfect. It's far from perfect, but they were a playoff team, and you had Matthew Stafford at quarterback. So these three teams, and we'll break them down individually, but they are an example of just how important that position is, aren't they?
Yeah, and you know what, Neil? Think about it. It's a glaring example of how important making the right choice at quarterback is. Because if you look at these three franchises, how many guys, let's start with Cleveland. I can't even tell you the number. I'm sure you know it. The number of guys
you.
Who have started at quarterback since the Browns came back.
Oh, it's funny you should ask, Jeffrey. I have this statistic. They have gone through 26 starting quarterbacks since 1999. They've had 12 in the last 6 years alone starting.
Okay, so whether it's a first-rounder like Johnny Manziel or a first-rounder like Tim Couch, those are huge, huge misses,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, huge misses. Then you talk about the Bears, and they go out and get Jay Cutler because he was going to be the answer. He was going to be the guy that put him over the top, right? Huge miss.
Mm.
Now you talk about San Francisco. They give away Alex Smith because Colin Kaepernick's going to be the answer. Huge miss.
Mm.
Where are all of those franchises right now? They're at the bottom of the league, struggling.
All right, let's start with the Cleveland Browns then. I'll give you the tale of the tape. They went 1-15 last year. Their only win came against the Chargers, the now Los Angeles Chargers. It came on Christmas Eve. They're owners of the first and 12th picks in the opening round of the 2017 draft. They had 14 picks last year. They've got another 14 selections in 2017 as they continue this money ball approach. They have a staggering $105 million to spend on free agents, by far the most in the NFL. Offense ranked 30th in the NFL, 28th in passing, 19th in rushing. Defense was 31st in the NFL, 21st in passing. They were 31st in rushing. And the first note I had, Jeff, was revolving door at quarterback again in 2016. I mean, that's still where you start with this franchise, isn't it?
No question. But, you know, looking forward, Neil, and you mentioned they have the first and 12th picks in the draft, yeah. Right? They are in the best position maybe they've ever been in terms of what having an opportunity to make up ground.
Yep.
And quarterback is not the only place where they need to make up ground.
No,
and now, again, when you start talking about a draft strategy, you look at, okay, where's the number one position we have to improve? We've all established that it's quarterback. How are you going to improve the quarterback position? Well, obviously, if you bring RG3 back, you're saying that he's going to be better, come another year off the injury, yada, yada, yada. Or you go trade for a guy like Jimmy Garoppolo, who has a small and a very small sample of quality work at the position. Yeah. Now, how many of these guys have we seen before who had these small bodies of work and then a team went out and invested big money or gave up first-round picks and all that stuff to get them and they didn't? You know, it's happened with New England quarterbacks before.
We saw it last year, Jeff. Brock Osweiler, just 7 starts.
Yeah, there's a perfect example. And, you know, Flynn and some of the other guys that have been through
Flynn,
this situation.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, so you gotta. This is where Sashi and all those guys, Hugh, and they're sitting down and they're hashing this out right now. Because you've got the first and the 12th. If you take the first and the 12th picks in the draft, you should significantly improve your football team at 2 positions. Mm. Now, whether there's a quarterback in this draft that is worthy of, to me right now, just looking at what I've watched, Neil, and I've watched a lot of it, I don't see a guy that I would take with the first pick in the draft. No way. Not at that position.
No.
Right? Now, 12th. Maybe if somebody emerges, and Mahomes at Texas Tech is the one that I think has the greatest chance, or Trubisky to go take that vertical climb that quarterbacks will take during the off season evaluation period, the combine and all that, some private workouts. Deshaun Watson, maybe.
Yeah.
But you're still at the 12th pick. You're talking about a significant player. Mm. That guy has to be a guy for you. So you've got a chance to make 2, or you maybe trade the 12th and get 2 more 2s, or however you. But you gotta look at the whole picture. This team has a number of spots. Now, I will give them credit; they've done a good job so far. I think in this offseason, they got Collins under contract. That's big. You got Christian Kirksey inside, another good young linebacker.
Yeah.
Shelton is a good young nose, particularly against the run. This is not a franchise that is the cupboard's completely bare. They got a, you know, where's Joe Hayden? What are you going to do with him in the back end, right? They got another young corner who can play a little bit. They need safeties terribly.
Yeah.
The thing that concerns me, the thing that I don't get, the part of it as from a coaching standpoint, I don't understand. You go out and get Greg Williams to come in. Now, Greg's a 4-3 guy. Now, does Danny Shelton fit in his scheme?
Yeah,
you know, because Danny Shelton's a two-gap nose tackle. Now, you're talking about the scheme change.
Yeah, well, this is the problem, Jeff, and we'll get into that with San Francisco in a moment. When you change coaches and you're flip-flopping and you're trying to find the magic formula, San Francisco are going to go from being a 3-4 team for a number of years to a 4-3 team. So you're trying to find the pieces that fit, and it can't be done in 1 year. I just want to go touch on something you mentioned there about re-signing Jamie Collins. And this, I think, is the key for the Cleveland Browns, because I said they've got $105 million to spend, but I don't know if it's going to be an attractive free agent destination, Jeff. You're going to have to overpay for some players if you want to bring in some quality. But you also, I think, their best bet for the next few years is to draft well, develop, and then re-sign their own, because I think that's going to be a key this year is they've re-signed Jamie Collins. Can they re-sign Terrell Pryor? Can they re-sign Isaiah Crowell? Because I'll give you a list. Last year, the Browns lost the following players to free agency. Center, Alex Mack. Tackle, Mitchell Schwartz. Wide receiver, Travis Benjamin. Safety, Tashaun Gibson. And they cut wide receiver, Taylor Gabriel. The year before, they lost defensive tackle, Atiba Rubin. Cornerback, Buster Screen. And outside linebacker, Jabal Sheard. They've got to stop this bleeding. They've got to keep the players in the building.
Yeah, and you know what? Part of keeping the players in the building is creating belief in the building that you have a chance, that you can do this. And I'll be honest with you, Neil, there have been too many shaky characters through that place.
Right.
You look at some of the things that have happened in Cleveland, and, you know, like I say, Devon Betts, who's one of my kids and, you know, was a big signing of them from Miami, goes up there and, you know, I don't even want to talk about it. It's so sad.
Yep.
And you got Josh Gordon. You can't win with those guys, or it's harder to win with those guys. And if you're a franchise that's trying to get it turned around and you're trying to create a culture of winning and you're trying to create a locker room where guys want to be at work, you can't have those kind of guys. Mm. And, you know, Isaiah Crowell, let's put it on the table. He flashes greatness, but he also brings an awful lot of baggage with him.
Yep.
Now, you got Terrell Pryor. You got to get that kid signed, in my opinion. Now,
yeah.
I understand he's got some. I've heard all different kind of things about that guy too. But if he at least says he wants to be in Cleveland.
He was one of the best players last year, wasn't he, Jeff?
Absolutely, and there's a kid that wants to be there, and he's an Ohio kid, and you know there's a lot of reasons. But you got to create in that locker room. You got to create a place, a belief system. It was interesting. The beauty of Christian Kirksey came through on our tour, and when we had him on ITH at the Super Bowl, that kid has not been spoiled yet by that environment.
Nice.
And they got to keep that kind of eager, young, you know, confident without, you know, I'm talking about confident without being cocky, belief that they're going to turn it around. Because the Cleveland Browns could not have sent a better ambassador to the UK than that kid.
He was the same
way on our podcast.
Jeff, let's go through a couple of areas. The offensive line gave up a league high 66 sacks on the season. The left side's not bad. Joe Thomas obviously is outstanding. 10th straight Pro Bowl. He's still never missed a snap in his career, getting up to 10,000 snaps that he's played. The center was an issue. Cameron Irving was very bad replacing Alex Mack, and the right side of the line was a problem. So there's one area. I look at the receivers. I think Corey Coleman can be a good one. I think he made a fast start, and he kind of, you know, had the broken hand and then struggled to get back. Joe Hayden, I still believe in, Jeff. I know they gave up 36 touchdown passes last year. That was the most in the NFL, but Hayden was injured a lot of the time. And like you mentioned, they didn't have much safety help. And then I think you've mentioned Shelton, and I think Emmanuel Ogba, a young player as well up front, can be doing some things for them. So there are some pieces there, but there are definitely holes, as you would expect from a 1-15 team.
Well, I think, first of all, I think Hayden will play better for Greg Williams.
Right.
You know, they got another young corner on the other side that can play a little bit. You know, you mentioned the center. They gotta get better there. That was such a huge drop off from Alex Mack. You're talking about going from a Pro Bowl guy to a guy that really just couldn't block inside. I mean, it was bad. And I think their right tackle, Neil, is a little bit better than people give him credit for,
particularly as a pass blocker.
So there's, you know, the offensive line, even though they gave up a bunch of sacks, you got to remember they threw the ball. I think they were the third most pass attempts in the league last year.
Right.
And they're playing from behind all the time so that, you know, there was no balance in the offense. So you're playing into the defense's hands all the time. So that number of sacks that they gave up and hits is a little bit, I would say, inflated, right? But I agree with you. I think this is not a roster that's totally – to me, there's a couple of other teams we're going to talk about are worse than the Browns are, and that sounds crazy because they won one game. But I see a light at the end of the tunnel if they have a great offseason.
Yeah, and Jeff, we often talk about when we're wrapping up, we say arrow up, down, or, you know, kind of staying the same. And I do still think this is an arrow up team. I think they've got a chance. You know, you talk about the draft being a lottery and buying lottery tickets. Well, they had 14 tickets last year. They've got a chance to add 14 more young players that's outside of free agency when they're going to make some moves and re-sign their own as well. So, you know, I think this is going to be an improved team. For me, they are an arrow up team. It's tough to be an arrow down team when you're 1-15. But I feel like, you know, they've still got the right coach. I still have belief in Hugh Jackson. Just as we wrap up on the Browns, where do you see them going?
Well, I'm going to tell you something. I swear to God, I did not put anything in my coffee this morning. And I really think that of the three teams we're talking about, I'll take the Browns. I'd rather be in Cleveland,
yeah,
right, than in Chicago. I'm just going to say that. Mm-hmm. That's because you got more cap space, you got more draft picks, you got more upside, and you're 1 year into a serious rebuild. Mm. In Chicago now, it's been two seasons, and if they don't get it done next year, I think you're going to see changes.
All right, let's move on to the San Francisco 49ers. So they fell from 5-11 in 2015 to 2-14 last year. That meant that Chip Kelly was one and done, just like Jim Tomsula before him. They're now paying a reported $69 million to head coaches and assistant coaches who are no longer with the team. There was lots of empty seats. It was a poor reflection on a once proud franchise. I think Jed York is going to be held accountable because he couldn't coexist with Jim Harbaugh. And he said famously after that Harbaugh parting that we want to win with class. I think they just want to win, Jeff. If you look at where this team was 4 years ago, a little bit of history and then we'll move on. But there was Super Bowl 47 against the Baltimore Ravens. 2 minute warning in the game. They're on the 5 yard line. Second down for the 49ers. The game in the hands of Colin Kaepernick, the young hot quarterback. Three straight incompletions. They lose the Super Bowl. Since then, they've fired three head coaches, changed general managers, lost so many players to free agency and retirement. It's been a dramatic four-year decline.
Well, I'm just going to tell you, I got to get a letter off to Mr. York, because if he wants to pay coaches not to coach, I'll go surf for 5 months in Hawaii and then come and do Sky Sports NFL with you for the rest of the year. I mean, come on, man.
Jeff, if that is now the criteria to be a coach professionally in the NFL, I think even I can do it.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing, isn't it? When you think about it, here was an organization that was really, I mean, both in the Bill Walsh era and then again under Harbaugh, frankly, was really highly respected as like a model franchise, and how the mighty have fallen. I mean, it is incredible. And like you say, this turnstile that's going on at the top of the organization got to stop. It's got to stop. And I think there were a lot of, you remember when we were at the Super Bowl and John Lynch got hired with a 6-year contract for a guy who's never been a GM.
Wow.
I think that's a positive sign in a way that there is going to be a commitment to doing it one way. Now, he may decide in another year that he's going to pay John Lynch for 5 more years to,
right,
you know, to not be a GM, but that's their choice. I thought that at least the optics of the 6-year deal were positive for 49ers fans.
Yeah, let's go on to Lynch and Kyle Shanahan in a second, Jeff. I'll just give you the numbers. The offense was 31st in the NFL. It was the worst passing attack in the league, just 181.9 yards per game. They were fourth in rushing, so not bad on the ground. Defense was the worst in the NFL, 14th against the pass. They absolutely got abused against the run. They were the worst run defense in the NFL, giving up 165.9 yards per game. So worst passing attack, worst rushing defense, but it is a total reboot. And Jeff, I've listened to a couple of interviews with John Lynch, and he said he kind of took a lot of advice from John Elway, and, you know, about a former player going in to run a front office. And I kind of like some of the stuff I'm hearing from John Lynch. He was very honest. I think he's very good with the media, as you would expect. I've met him a few times through his course of working and commentating for Fox. I think he is very open and very honest, but of course he's very media savvy as well. But he actually tested the 49ers organization because he wanted to see if they could keep the secret that he might go there, and they did, and he liked that. But I like the fact that he's talked about it being like eating a big steak. You can only take it one bite at a time. And he actually was very honest about Kyle Shanahan and the kind of the mistakes that were made in the Super Bowl recently for the Atlanta Falcons. And he said, I'm glad Kyle learned that lesson with Atlanta and not with us. I mean, he didn't shy away from a lot of stuff. I've listened to a number of John Lynch interviews. I feel pretty good about or interested to see where he can take this team.
I think he is an exceptionally bright guy. He's a Stanford guy. Mm-hmm. And for our listeners who in the UK may not really appreciate what Stanford is. Stanford is one of the finest institutions in the world, and it is extremely hard to get in there. He, you know, was not only a great player there, he was a great student at Stanford. He is a very, very, very intelligent man. He's been around great football people his whole career. He's learned and watched from some of the best. Elway, again, is a Stanford guy. He was with Tony in Tampa Bay for all those years. Even his three-game stint at the end of his career in New England made a huge impression on him because of the way that, you know, he saw that the Patriots did business. I think he'll take all of those things and create an environment in San Francisco that, you know, obviously is his own. But I've been impressed with just a little thing that I saw the other day where he's actually on the phone calling season ticket holders, encouraging them to you know, renew their tickets or come back to the 49ers. I think he sees the business side of it, and I think he understands the football side of it to a great extent.
Yeah, I think the 49ers accept that it's been a dramatic and a very quick decline, but the climb back up could take a little bit longer, and maybe that's why they've both got 6-year deals. Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch both have said about the need to get a quarterback in place, and they have 16 free agents this year, including quarterbacks Blaine Gabbert, Thad Lewis, Christian Ponder, and Colin Kaepernick opting out of his deal makes him a free agent. So, you know, all options are on the table now for this team at quarterback. They've got $81.88 million of salary cap room, Jeff, third most in the NFL. And I do still think this could be an attractive free agent destination if in the right situation. And yeah, we don't know what they'll do at quarterback, whether they'll try and make a play for Kirk Cousins, whether that'll even be an option, because Washington might take that off the table in the coming weeks. But does it start? Does it all, again, is it, you know, they went from Blaine Gabbert last year, who was 1-4, to Colin Kaepernick, who was 1-10, and clearly still not the answer, although there were times when he was their most dynamic player. He can certainly run when he tucks the ball away. Is this where we start with this team, Jeff?
Yeah, I think so. And I think, you know, this is a roster that when you look at it, Neil, and I think if you look, you can see that it's a roster that's not good enough. And it's not big enough. It's not strong enough. It's not physical enough. It's not athletic enough, but you got to start. I think you got to start at the quarterback position. But again, here we go. We're talking about a huge need area for a number of teams, and not just the three we're talking about today, but a number of teams and a very limited pool of players. I agree with you 100%. This could be a destination free agency spot. They've got a lot of cap space, and it's a tremendous place to live. It's expensive, but it's a tremendous place to live. They've got great facilities, new stadium. I mean, it's gorgeous, and they've got great history. Now, can you parlay that into enough guys that can come in and make an impact? You look at Shanahan, what he did with the offense in Atlanta, where they added some free agents, whether they were street free agents like, you know, Aldrick Robinson or Taylor Gabriel, or, you know, the more traditional free agents like Sanu, and, you know, they were able to add the pieces.
Yeah.
Now, can he do the same thing in San Francisco? I think so.
Just going to take time, isn't it? One of the things that might be a key, Jeff, is Carlos Hyde at running back. And, you know, let's talk about extending his contract. He's been the centerpiece of the offense because, I mean, well, there's just not much at receiver. As we start to break this down, Jeff, Jeremy Curley is a free agent slot receiver. And when you look at that being quite a priority for San Francisco to re-sign him because they don't have much else, I think it puts pressure on Curley and then trying to get him re-signed. Carlos Hyde has had a couple of injuries, but he can be that bell cow you're looking for. I mean, there's a couple you've got to try and get back or get tied down for a long period of time. But again, you need to find a Taylor Gabriel. You need to find a Mohamed Sanu. I mean, they'd fall over themselves to find a Julio Jones.
I agree with you 100% because, you know, what does that say? When we're sitting here, you and I are talking about one of my priority deals is to get Jeremy Curley signed, that tells you you don't have much else.
Right.
Because and I'm a Jeremy Curley fan. He was at TCU when I was at SMU. Dynamic yeah. kid. He can return in a lot of stuff, right? But he has never been a – he's never been even a Golden Tate in the league. You know what I'm saying? He's always been kind of a backup guy, you know, swing guy, return guy, and has shown flashes. But, you use the term bell cow. You need a bell cow receiver, too. You need that definite number one, that go-to guy. I'm not sure that's what Jeremy Curley's role will ever be.
No, they don't even have a – they are nowhere close to having a number one wide receiver on their team, Jeff, and you can't even look and say there's a number two on there. You know, behind Jeremy Curley, Quinton Patton had the next most catches. Curley had 64. Patton had 37. He's a free agent, but you're not falling over yourself to re-sign him. I mean, Torrey Smith didn't get the job done. They do not have a number one wide receiver.
No, they don't, and that was exactly my point. And, you know, defensively, you look at them, and I watched them closely during the time while I was in London, you know, working for Sky, because you have access to all the film, and I just thought structurally they were bad on defense. There were a number of times that they just were out of position, took bad angles, just, you know, again, it was little hard to evaluate them from a personnel standpoint because they were so bad structurally.
Yeah, I had that down on my notes, Jeff, defensive structure, because I can remember sitting next to you with you pulling your hair out at just players being in the wrong position. It's going to be interesting again, though, and this is the danger, or not the danger, but just one of the hurdles you have to overcome when you are a John Lynch or a Kyle Shanahan coming in and you're going to eventually build with your own guys, but to start with, you're going to be playing with a number of players that somebody else believed in. And here's a couple of examples. So the Jags linebackers coach, Robert Saleh, is coming over as the new defensive coordinator. He's going to switch to the 4-3. Niners have been a 3-4 team since 2007. And their last two high draft picks, first-round draft picks, Arik Armstead and DeForest Buckner, are both considered 3-4 defensive ends, Jeff. So now you've suddenly got, well, our last two first round draft picks might not fit what we're about to play, and we might have to try and, you know, shove their square peg into a round hole.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You know, we talked about that with the Cleveland situation, who's been a 3-4 team for, you know, really, I think 3 or 4 or 5 years. You start building your football team around that scheme, just like when you are a 4-3 guy and you build your team around a 4-3 scheme, and then all of a sudden you got to go find a 3-4 nose tackle. Hard to find them. You know, I mean, and so now these two ends, where do they transition into the 4-3? Is one of them good enough to be what they call the over tackle, the 2-0 tackle, that's, you know, the Warren Sapp guy that you need to play in the 4-3? You know, so I don't know if DeForest Buckner can handle that role. Plays too high. You know, again, sometimes, you know, those guys have ability. They wouldn't be first-round picks if they didn't have ability. But can they maximize their talents inside that scheme? We'll see. That's going to be Sally's challenge as he puts his defense together.
Jeff, we had an arrow up for the Cleveland Browns. Like you said, you'd be a bit more worried about San Francisco and Chicago. I mean, I feel like they're literally this feels to me, and I'm looking at the depth chart in front of me, you know, Vance McDonald at tight end, Garrett Celek at tight end, Bruce Ellington and Torrey Smith and Rod Streeter at wide receiver. I mean, you've still got Joe Staley on the left side of the offensive line, but nothing to speak of on the right side. The secondary has been a bit of a mess. I mean, this is like when Jacksonville were at rock bottom and you start the rebuild. I mean, this feels like the cupboard is about as bare as it could be.
I agree with you. I think this is a team. I won't say they're arrow down, because I don't know how much further down you can go. But I think it's a flat arrow right now. And until – but again, just when I say that, remember, and I'm a 49er fan, remember as I say that, it's a long off season and there's a lot of things that can happen. But right now, this is about as bad as it gets. And so the positive in it is you got a new organization coming in, new blood, new ideas, new thoughts, new energy, and now you can begin to point your arrow north. Now, again, let's watch the process.
Yeah, I certainly think it's going to be worth watching with, with John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan at the helm. They pick second in the 2017 draft, and as I mentioned, they've got plenty of cap room, third most in the NFL. So the total reboot is underway in San Francisco. Let's have a look at the Chicago Bears. It was their second season under John Fox. They were slow out of the gate with an 0-3 start. They ended the year with an NFL high 19 players on injured reserve. They went 3-13. Their only wins came over Detroit, Minnesota, and San Francisco. But when you look at the numbers, it wasn't that bad. Offense was 15th in the NFL, 14th passing, 17th rushing. Defense was 15th, so both sides of the ball, middle of the pack. They were 7th in passing yards, 27th against the run. They've got the third pick in the 2017 draft. They've got salary cap room of about $57 or $58 million, so 9th best in the NFL. But again, this looks like a team that is going to tell Jay Cutler they're not going to pay him $16 million in 2017. So are they then going to have a stopgap of Brian Hoyer? Are they going to say to Matt Barkley, that wasn't bad what you showed us last year, you're only 26, we'll take a bit of that, thank you very much. I mean, again, Jeff, it just, again, you start with the quarterback position. They've got big decisions to make on a number of players, the Chicago Bears. They've got a number of bloated contracts that they might want to get rid of, starting with Jay Cutler.
Well, you hit something I think that I want to spend a second on, Neil, is you're talking about 15th in the league on offense, 15th in the league on defense. You're in the middle of the pack. There's 32 teams in the league. You're in the middle of the pack on both offensive and defensive productivity. But yet you win three games. What does that tell you about your football team? You find ways to lose, right? You should not win three games when you're in the middle of the pack statistically in both offense and defense. They have to become a better continuity football team. They have to become a better complementary football team. The first thing to me that you need to do is you need to just admit your mistake and move on from Jay Cutler and get that over with. And I think that that's something that's been lingering in Chicago for both of Foxy's 2 years. I think they came in with the idea that they could fix him. How many guys have been through that place thinking they could fix him? I mean, you can start naming a list of doggone good football coaches that are, you know, no longer coaching in the National Football League. And to be honest with you, and I'm a Foxy guy to the end, if he doesn't get it done next year, he'll be one of them too. You know, I'm talking about Lovie Smith. Yeah. I'm talking about Mark Trestman. At some point, you gotta point the arrow where it belongs.
Well, at some point, Jeff Cutler, I've said this a number of times. Cutler is, once you're 8-9 years into your career, you are kind of what you are, and he's never shown any signs of changing. He is a physically gifted, strong-armed passer who will make the most head-scratching throws and will turn the ball over and will ultimately let you down. He has been that for his entire career. Why is it going to change now?
And he's a lightning rod for criticism. He reminds me very, very much of a guy that my friend June Jones told me is the most physically talented quarterback he was ever around. And he was around Brett Favre and a lot of them. And that's Jeff George, a guy that could make all the throws. Mm-hmm. He would be the biggest tease in the world because you could see what he could do physically. He was a tough guy to be around, and he would make incredibly bad throws, critical mistake throws, and never really took accountability for it. I mean, that's the guy that you got right there. And how many teams did Jeff go through?
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they tried. It didn't work in Indianapolis. Didn't work in Atlanta. Didn't work in Oakland. I mean, I don't know. I know that's not all of them. Yeah. And so, you know, I think you gotta make that call. And the sooner you make the call, the sooner you clear the air and you start moving in another direction. I think you just continue to, you know, to pick at the scab, if you will, by keeping him around.
They've got a few like that, Jeff. I mean, Lamar Houston's going to earn $7 million next year. He's not really panned out as a free agent defensive lineman. Eddie Royal's going to get $5 million at wide receiver. That's a lot for a slot receiver. When you look at New England, they're asking Danny Amendola to take yet another pay cut up in Boston, and you saw how productive he has been in recent years. They've got Tracy Porter is going to make $4 million at cornerback. in 2017. He was actually their best corner last year, but he was rated by Pro Football Focus as the number 118 cornerback in the NFL on a chart grading 120 players. I mean, there's a few that they might have to, you know, Ryan Pace is going to have to make some of those business of the business decisions. And he has been quoted as saying that everything is on the table when it comes to quarterback. Jeff, let's look on the offensive side of the ball. Good couple of running backs, I guess, if we're going to be positive. Jordan Howard went to the Pro Bowl as a rookie, and Jeremy Langford can make some plays out of the backfield.
Yeah, I think both those kids are winners. I think both those kids are the kind of back that you can, you know, you talk about back by committee, which is kind of the way it is right now in the league. And I think both those guys are, you know, certainly good enough to win with. So there's a starting point. There's a plus.
What would you do about Alshon Jeffery? They have they franchise tagged him last year. So if you do it again, you're going to pay another 20% on top of what he got last year. And he had 821 yards and two touchdowns. 4-game suspension for performance-enhancing drugs, so there's that hanging over him as well. But he's the most talented player on their roster. Jeff, what do you do with Alshon Jeffery?
Well, you know, here's a big, strong guy that really, you know, can make some plays. But he needs players around him
right.
to be able to really – I mean, he is kind of a one-trick pony, Neil, a little bit. You know, he has trouble getting away from, guy, you know, people that press him and bang him around.
Yep.
You know, if he can't run over the top of you, he just doesn't have that spot quickness, you know. So he has some holes in his game, and people see that and take advantage of it if there's not, you know, somebody else. When it was Brandon Marshall there, it was a little different deal, right?
Yeah,
so you couldn't do some of that stuff to him. Well, now that's not the case, and you see his numbers go, and then you got the PED issue, and I think that's one you got to look at real. I would not overpay for him because I think what the Bears have done, and you rattled off about four of them, you know, you want your highest earners to be your most productive players, and you want them, frankly, to be your best workers and best guys in the locker room. Well, it doesn't look like it's that. That's the case in Chicago.
No, I guess as well, you often do have to overpay to keep players like that. He's going to test the market, so. They've got to decide whether they want to pay big bucks for Alshon Jeffery. You talked earlier, Jeff, about teams that miss on players and how it can set you back. And I think while we stick with wide receivers, Kevin White was a 7th overall pick in 2015 for the Bears. He's played in 4 games since then. I mean, it's a miss from an injury and a health point of view, but a miss is a miss, and that's set this passing attack back. And really, they rely a lot on Cameron Meredith at tight end, and Zach Miller at tight end, and there hasn't been that second wide receiver really making a number of plays opposite Alshon Jeffery.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. I'm not sure that if I would give Alshon Jeffery the number one tag,
right,
because he doesn't have some parts of his game that you'd like in a number one, so he's probably really more of a two.
Yep.
And so now you look at, think about that. Now he's being forced to play as a one. You have no two. I think your tight end. I think your tight ends are adequate. I think they're good enough. You know, I think they can. You can win with those kinds of guys at tight end. But they're, you know, like you said, whether it's a miss by evaluation or if it's a miss by injury, a miss is a miss. Mm. Right now, you know, and again, they can't miss anymore. You can't miss year after year after year. Shea McClellan was a miss, right?
Yeah.
And you go back through the draft and it's just miss.
Well,
and you can't do that because it just sets you back way too far. You're going to lose enough of them to injury. You're going to lose enough of them to free agency. You're going to lose enough of them to retirement. You can't miss on them in the draft. That's why the draft is so critical.
Jeff, you and I always talk about San Diego and the number of injuries they have. I think we've got to look seriously at the Chicago Bears and whether it's an epidemic or just bad luck. But Kyle Fuller, who was a first-round draft pick, he missed all of last season at cornerback. You got Eddie Goldman at nose tackle. He missed 10 games last year. Pernell McPhee was an expensive free agent. He missed 7 games. Danny Trevathan was the big headline signing last year in free agency. He went down with a bad knee injury at the end of November and could start this coming season, 2017, on the physically unable to perform list. I mean, this has just been a tale of woe in terms of injuries, and when you look at some of those players, if you get them healthy, I mean, they need help at safety, definitely. They need more corners, but they could have half a chance, but they just have been struck down by injuries.
Well, again, positive, try and find a positive in every situation. Positive is, with the exception of Trevathan, those guys should be healthy and ready to play, right? And you look at those guys. I mean, they thought Eddie Goldman was the answer, right? I mean, he was a big piece then. Pernell McPhee. Those are the kind of guys that you go out and get, and you need production from them. Now, get them on the field. They got to get healthy. They got to get on the field. A friend of mine is does all the analytics for the Bears. He's got some crazy title, and you know, they spend huge amounts of money and time trying to figure out, you know, better ways to practice and how much work they're getting and all. And some of it's just the game. It comes with the territory. It comes with playing this game. But, you know, I don't know whether, you know, Foxy's got to, you know, take a trip to Lourdes or get more rabbit's feet in his pocket or, you know, but they need a little luck too, you know, and they got to keep these guys on the field and being productive.
Jeff, I'm going to say the arrow is kind of pointed sideways for the Chicago Bears. Like the other two, they've got to find the answer at quarterback. How do you see, as we sum up the Chicago Bears, how do you see this franchise? Arrow up, down, or sideways?
I agree with you, Neil. I'm going to put arrow sideways because I think when you win three games, it's hard to have an arrow down. I mean, you know, if you're – but if they can get guys healthy – now, here we go, right? I'll just tell you something that somebody told me once. If grandma had different parts, she'd be grandpa. So, I mean, ifs, right? So, yeah, if they can get these guys healthy, and I mean, if you draft it, if you can find a receiver in the off season, and, you know, again, if you move Cutler and clear the air there, I think the Bears can, you know, I mean, remember now, the Bears are playing in not the greatest division in the history of football, right? So, you know, you can make some ground up in that division. Now, can you beat the Packers? I don't know, but you know, you can catch Detroit, I think, and I think Minnesota's, you know, shown that they've got some issues. So, you know, they can be competitive. It's just, you know, you look at 15th, like you said, 15th in defense, 15th in offense.
With all those players missing.
With all those guys missing, and find a way to get on a run and get a little luck and get a bounce of the ball, and away you go. And next year we're talking about the Bears, you know, winning 10 games. You know, I think that can happen. Now, it sounds crazy for a team that won three, but they're not that far away.
All right, that's our state of the franchise for this week. Next week we'll do Jacksonville. We'll do the L.A. Rams, because they would have had the fifth overall pick, but that's gone to the Tennessee Titans. But we'll do the Rams as we go from worst to first in the NFL. So we'll do Jacksonville, the Rams, and the New York Jets. Jeff, we're well over the hour already. I can't believe where the time's gone. But let's take a couple of quick questions in the mailbag. One from Jack Hobbs, who says, what is your favorite part of the off-season? Jeff, I'll go first on this, actually. I've got three things that are my favorite part of the off-season. Training camp. I love touring training camp. Going on holiday. That's always in there. But my favorite, actually, my favorite is the opening night of free agency. I always think there's so much drama to the opening night of free agency when you look at you can have trades, like we had the Jimmy Graham trade a couple of years ago. Last year we saw Brock Osweiler, news emerged that he was going to move on from the Denver Broncos. And then you get high profile veteran cuts as well as the league year officially opens. So for me, that's Thursday, March the 9th. It opens at 9 p.m. UK time. I'm going to go with my favorite part of the offseason being the opening night of free agency. What about for you?
All right, now this is shameless ITH promotion, but I'm doing it anyway. Every Tuesday morning at 8 o'clock, that's my favorite part of the off season when we can sit and do this, because it is. I mean, because it recaps a week of all kinds of things happening in the league. There is no time in the league where you can just, you know, wait for the transfer deadline. There's things popping all the time, and we get a chance to chew those up and look at each team. So I think that's fun for me. I love watching the build up to the draft, the combine and those kinds of things. I love learning about these young players and, you know, trying to see where they might fit and who might like them and all, you know, talking ball with those guys when you go to the combine. Then frankly, Neil, to me, and I hope we get the opportunity to do this, you talked about free agency day, but to me, the draft, because that is such a special thing. For the player, it's, you know, the realization of a dream he's had since he was 8 years old, some of them. For the teams, it's an opportunity to look to the future. For the league, it's a celebration of their our history, and it's a welcoming in to a very select fraternity of players, all of these new kids. And you know, who's going to be, you know, the next Tom Brady? Who's going to be, you know, the next Odell Beckham Jr.? Who's going to be, the next Jadeveon Clowney? Yeah. I mean, it's so much fun to see and be a part of that, and I certainly hope that we're able to bring that to the UK fans.
It always goes both ways, Jeff. Who's going to be the next Johnny Manziel? I mean, that's the whole beauty of the draft. You never know.
Exactly. That's the, you know, that's the drama of that night and the anticipation. And, you know, you see watching an Aaron Rodgers slide and be the only guy left in the green room. And, you know, the humiliation that he must have felt. And yet now he's maybe the best quarterback in the game at this point, right? So, I mean, it's all of those things. Who's going to be, you know, the next Ryan Leaf? I mean, it's all of it, right?
So, Jeff, you gave a much more politically correct answer about the Inside the Huddle podcast. So now what I'm going to do is I'm going to give my answer and say my favorite part of the offseason is going out on tour and meeting all the great fans, and then I'm just going to edit out the old bit.
All right, well, let's go. I heard there's a chance we might be doing that.
I think we are, Jeff. I think we've just got to wait to hold your horses for a second on the big announcement, but we are going to go on tour in April. I'll just tease that for now to everyone out there, and we will announce soon where we're going. But we're going to fire up the tour bus again, which actually broke down last time, so that's a little bit worrying. But we are coming back on the road, which will be a lot of fun.
I heard that the tour bus might be this trip going to Ibiza and then to Pharos and then Honolulu by way of Bangkok and Phuket and
Rio. then as it turns to spring, we'll go to Nice and Barcelona.
Yes, there you go. Yeah, we just might be on tour forever.
Yeah, I think we need to broaden this game's appeal and go truly global. Jeff, we're out of time. Thank you for everyone who sent in questions. We'll get to a lot more of those next week. Me and Jeff are always going to overrun this week because we haven't spoken for a little while. So we'll be back next week with more news from around the NFL. We'll be inching closer to free agency opening on March the 9th. And we'll look at the Rams, the Jags, and the Jets in our state of the franchise. Until then, say goodbye, Coach.
Aloha.